Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. The Labour Party has just released its manifesto, just as long as we were led to believe by last week's leak, and also just as radical. More taxes for those earning more than 80 grand, shedloads of nationalisations, 100,000 more affordable homes, and various other things which lead you to believe that Jeremy Corbyn is a man of his word when he says he wants a radical alternative to the Conservatives. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by my colleague Katie Balls and YouGov's Marcus Roberts to discuss. So, Katie, for ages, people have been asking Jeremy Corbyn, how are you going to pay for all of this? Some pretty bold moves here. And we've had some quite bold tax increases. So, does it all work now? Do the sums add up?
Yeah, I mean, John McDonnell appeared on the Today programme ahead of the launch to tell us, you know, how well balanced this whole manifesto is. But there is a slight problem. Along with lots of their policies, which are paid for by raising tax and cracking down on tax evasion, apparently, they've got all these nationalisation plans that don't seem to feature.
Nationalising what, for example? Costing.
What not? They want to, they want to nationalise the railways, they want to nationalise the national grid, mm-hmm. they want to nationalise the Royal Mail, water, energy services.
But this isn't included as a cost in their manifesto.
No. And I think some people would say this is because it's a one-off payment. And therefore, it would count as borrowing and you get that back. But given that, for example, Thames Water would cost over £10 billion probably to buy out, it's not a small sum that Labour need to find the money from. And when Jeremy Corbyn was quizzed about how much borrowing this would entail, he didn't answer. He managed to avoid that one.
Now, Marcus, I guess it's been some time since the Labour Party proposed out-and-out nationalisation. Perhaps they're out of practice, but this will, and perhaps is intended, to strike people as a radical, even populist left policy. There is a market for that, isn't there?
Without question. I think this is the latest indication that Jeremy Corbyn is pursuing the kind of core vote strategy that he needs if he wants to hold on to the Labour leadership after June the 8th. What that means is focusing on pushing the Labour vote share as high as possible, getting it as close to Ed Miliband's 30-31 points that he achieved 2 years ago as possible, even if that comes at a cost of losing an awful lot of Labour seats along the way, just so he can say the day after the election, or more likely John McDonnell can say, we hung on. We held our position. But the problem for Labour in doing that is it is likely piling up the wrong kinds of votes in the wrong kinds of places. A radical left-wing manifesto like this may go down very well with middle-class lefties in existing super-safe Labour seats. It is likely to play pretty poorly with some of Labour's more important swing voters in Labour marginals.
So, Katie, I mean, let's assume that Jeremy Corbyn does not want to become Prime Minister, that his real mission here is to capture the Labour Party to maintain his hold or position on it or that of his colleagues. In that case, this all seems to make sense. And I put to you that his success is actually quite extraordinary. I mean, we've got 30% of the country say they're going to vote Labour in the current opinion polls. 30% support for policies like this, which we thought were completely unsellable. You can see why Jeremy Corbyn might say, well, actually, I have just made this agenda more popular than anybody thought possible. So for my brand of far-left politics, this election is going to be quite a success.
Yeah, exactly. And if you take it as an example in not kind of getting the keys to number 10, but instead, you know, improving your support base, you don't really need to cost how you're going to do nationalisation. You just need to talk about it. But there is, after the draft manifesto was launched last week, the Mirror did a poll which asked voters what they thought about all the individual policies. Mm-hmm. And voters really liked them as individual policies. The two problems were A, Jeremy Corbyn, and B, they didn't actually really believe Labour would do them. But I think because we're missing the whole fear factor we had in 2015 when lots of people were terrified of Ed Miliband
actually getting in.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of people were like, well, the Tories are going to win anyway and I like some of these ideas, so I'll take a punt. Whereas I think if they thought the chance of Jeremy Corbyn actually being Prime Minister was a bit more real, then they might take it a bit more seriously.
Marcus, I saw a survey that YouGov did last week just testing the popularity of various far-left or far-right proposals. It's demonstrating that what is regarded as a fringe position in Westminster, quite often gets about half of the public supporting it. For example, I think 50% from memory would abolish all foreign aid spending, or there's a huge number would stop all immigration. Now, you might think there are right-wing policies, but you can take the similar on the left, and you find quite a lot of support. Isn't this Jeremy Corbyn's point, that these things are more popular than people think?
Just so, but Katie just now hit upon the most essential point here, which is that voters, when they go to the polls on June 8th, are not going to be going casting their votes in large numbers based upon manifestos or policies. They're going to be casting that vote based upon who they want as Prime Minister. They're going to be casting that vote based upon who they trust, who they think is competent, who they think will keep the national security strong. And in all of these areas and more, Theresa May has a distinct, if not dramatic, advantage over Jeremy Corbyn. And so the Labour Party may very well be enjoying its moment in the sun as people celebrate individual elements of a manifesto that they may agree with. It still does not necessarily change the outcome of this election.
All right. So, Katie, the Conservatives' response to Labour's manifesto is pretty straightforward. Same old Labour, tax and spend. But I've been struck by the extent to which Theresa May can get away with this, given that her published policies, her budget, involves significantly more spending, significantly more tax, significantly more debt. I guess you need somebody to point that out, but nobody wants to right now. And it seems as if the Tories nobody's really scrutinising them very much throughout this campaign.
Exactly, but I think, with an opposition which is so far to the left and also not placing much pressure on you, it's very easy to just be a bit slack about it. I mean, obviously the fact that Theresa May has a policy that 2 years ago the Conservatives were calling Marxist.
That's the energy price caps.
Is it odd and a bit of a problem, but a lot of the same papers which were criticising Ed Miliband for it have found some, light praise for this policy now. I guess you're judging it comparatively, and these people would be much more worried by a Jeremy Corbyn manifesto than Theresa May's. But by having such kind of left radical policies, it does allow Theresa May the chance to put in things that she normally wouldn't be able to get away with.
Marcus, one of the things I've been struck by is the strength of Theresa May's personal approval rating. I mean, it is off the charts. Nobody has recorded a higher approval rating since records began in the late 70s. And yet still, Labour doesn't seem to be that far behind where Ed Miliband was, 31%, you say. So why is Labour at 30% now if Jeremy Corbyn is such a disaster, if he is turning away so many Labour voters? You pick up the papers and you hear Labour MPs saying, oh, heartlands don't take us seriously, we're having doors slammed in our face, nobody likes Jeremy Corbyn. But they seem to be telling the opinion polls that they will still vote Labour in roughly the same numbers as they did under Ed Miliband. So what do you think is going on?
There's a bunch of different factors in play here. One, the Labour brand loyalty is probably stronger than we previously thought. Two, it is probably the case that there's a whole bunch of Labour voters, maybe as many of 10 points of Labour's 30 points of voters, who are generally considered to be pro-Labour but pretty down on Jeremy Corbyn. At the moment, Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party is hanging on to those 10 points. But those are the 10 points of voters that the Conservative Party will be going after most aggressively in the final weeks of this campaign.
Hence the recent messages about we're going to extend workers' rights, etc., the kind of Red Theresa strategy.
Absolutely. But it's even more essential than that, because it's about how those voters think and how they feel. They may very well think that they would quite like to vote for the Labour Party, but how many of them will feel that they can actually vote for the Labour Party when push comes to shove?
But wasn't this the question of a 2010 general election? David Cameron at one point had been hugely ahead in the polls there. He didn't get his majority because the Labour brand turned out to be a lot stronger than people thought. Might we end up with the same surprise this time?
We could end up with a surprise in that the Labour Party doesn't end up at the low 20s, but I think it is more likely that the Labour Party ends up 25 to 30 points than that it actually achieves the Ed Miliband number again. After all, when we began this election campaign, we saw the Labour position in the mid-20s and the Conservatives in the mid to high 40s. We then went into the campaign and the Labour Party's had the chance to talk a lot about those popular policies. But when we reach the conclusion of the campaign and people actually vote, they'll go back to what are the essentials of this vote about, and it will switch from being who would I like to vote for in an ideal world to who will I actually stomach as prime minister. And that's why I would say that an opinion poll high of 30 or 31 points 23 days out is not necessarily going to be mirrored by an actual result in these numbers in 3 weeks' time.
Now, Katie, a lot of Labour moderates are rather hoping that Labour are going to be defeated by such a big margin that Jeremy Corbyn will be gone and they might be able to get some control of the party. In fact, you can just imagine them sitting in the manifesto meeting saying, yeah, yeah, rail, nationalise it, water, yeah, energy, but throw it in, why not? Post office. So when this agenda all fails, they can say, look, you tried all that hard left stuff, the public have rejected it, it's now time to emphatically drop it. You might have fantasised that you might win or even get a good chunk of the country over to this agenda, it has failed. This is quite a high-risk strategy from them, because what if he doesn't fail to the extent that they think?
Exactly. I think that's at play to some degree. I also think it's notable that two of the things that I think Labour would have had a massive difficulty shaking off in future elections, which would have been scrapping the 2% of, you know, GDP on defence and saying they don't want Trident, were kept out of that manifesto. And to me, I think that is works for the moderates too, because if Labour were to do that, I think it would be quite hard to repair the damage. But Labour moderates have a difficult game at the moment, because many of them are the ones in marginal seats, and they need to do enough that they keep their seats while hoping that their party generally doesn't do well enough. Maybe it's just the more Corbynite MPs that lose their seats. So they're going around telling voters, don't worry, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn's not going to be Prime Minister. But at the end of the day, if they do get a decent vote share, that's a disappointment to the same people, because then they're going to have a much harder time getting rid of the leader.
And Marcus, how do you see the prospects of Labour moderates on the day after the election? I mean, they've tried, you know, a couple of times to do something. They've failed. Are people talking now about a realistic chance of doing something after the general election, or do you think they've given up hope?
I don't think Labour moderates have ever given up hope, and possibly some of them, many of them, never will. The question for them is, what is the right strategy to achieve a change in the event that the Labour Party loses this election as badly as the polls indicate that it is on course to? And there they've got a big choice. Do they challenge immediately and risk the discussion being about who caused this defeat? Was it the divisions within the Parliamentary Labour Party, or was it Jeremy Corbyn's far-left politics? Or do they wait to see if Jeremy Corbyn might actually be compelled by the political gravity of a disastrous election result into leaving office, if not of his own volition, then, shall we say, assisted by various former allies along the way? And that is probably more likely right now, because I think there is little appetite in the Parliamentary Labour Party as it stands to take particularly aggressive action in the immediate aftermath. After all, there will be enough time needed to mourn the loss of their colleagues and let the results of the likely loss, a likely landslide loss, sink in. And so I think Labour moderates are looking very carefully at acting very cautiously in the wake of any election defeat that may occur.
I think what is worrying quite a lot of the moderates is they feel that Jeremy Corbyn is already planning for the leadership election. Like, you look at the seats he's visiting.
Absolutely.
A lot of them think these are seats where, you know, the membership are, and that's where he got the highest votes for his candidacy. I think around Yorkshire, I think he did quite well in the membership.
Mm-hmm. And so it looks like a leadership campaign rather than an election campaign.
There are definitely a few Labour politicians who feel like this is a leadership campaign. Oh. And that's why you're not seeing him in lots of these marginals. Partly because maybe the MPs don't want him in the marginals, but
very much so. And the manifesto makes much more sense when you view it through the prism of this is a leadership campaign manifesto telling the Labour membership that, you know, it can have its cake and eat it too in ending homelessness and nationalising the means of production, distribution and exchange. But that is again about creating a narrative that can be used by Corbynites or Corbynistas from June the 9th onwards to allow them to retain control of the party. And that's going to be about the national percentage vote share and how wonderfully radical their manifesto and their politics are. Mm-hmm. That's what they're gambling on, being able to control the party with.
And Marcus, finally, I know YouGov does now and again some opinion polling of Labour Party members. I think it was YouGov's polling that showed how hopeless it was last time around to challenge Jeremy Corbyn, given that something like two-thirds of the party had joined after the Corbyn era. Has there been any recent sampling of opinion? Do we know if these Corbynistas are still members of the party, and does it still look as big a hurdle to cross as it did this time last year?
Well, right now, my guess would be in the middle of an election, the Labour Party membership, Corbynite or not, is absolutely behind getting their local Labour MPs re-elected, or if you happen to be a Momentum activist in, say, Baron Furness or Ilford North, getting someone else nearby elected. The point is that Labour Party members are absolutely interested and focused on this election. And so anyone attempting to go on manoeuvres right now, or anyone trying to even sample the Labour membership with regard to a possible leadership challenge, would probably be making a grave mistake right now. But we mustn't forget how political gravity takes hold after an election result. And things that seem certain beforehand change when day breaks and dozens, if not scores, if not even potentially triple digits worth of Labour MPs have lost their seats, and the political dynamic changes as a consequence.
Marcus and Katie, thanks very much. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, in the iTunes store, and if you enjoy it, or even if you don't, then you can rate it too. You can also subscribe to the magazine from just £1 a week on spectator.co.uk/subscribe. Thanks for listening. I'm Fraser Nelson, and this podcast was produced by Nick Hilton.